And we'll move to the first case of the day then, Ronald McCallowitz against the Village of Bedford Park. Mr. Zachary.
Panel, as you know, this is a case arising from both a pre-termination hearing, and I use that term, I suppose, with inverted commas, and a post-termination hearing before the Board of Trustees of the Village of Bedford Park, Illinois. Ronald Michalowicz, the appellant in this case, was given a so-called pre-termination hearing by the Board of Trustees, at which we contend there was no appropriate explanation of the evidence, nor an appropriate opportunity to respond, a chance to present his side of the story. Moreover, the course of that so-called pre-termination hearing, which was convened on two occasions, strongly suggests that ex parte communications, either pertaining to evidence or some other communications, played a material role in the board's decision.
What's the status of the matter in the Cook County Circuit Court?
The complaint for administrative review, the amended complaint, to be accurate, is pending. That complaint was filed by Ron Michalowicz's my co-counsel, Michael Ettinger, his trial attorney, at a time when it appeared there was no basis for a post-termination hearing in Bedford Park. That is when the complaint for administrative review was filed. Moreover, the 35-day period was about to elapse. Mr. Ettinger wanted to preserve Ron's rights that would otherwise expire. Hence, that complaint was filed. It's pending. We contend that it is impossible in the context of that particular forum, in the context of administrative review, to get the relief that we feel is earnestly warranted in this case.
Why is that? I assume if the circuit court were to conclude that the hearings were somehow or other improper, you'd be entitled to a new hearing and possible reinstatement and back pay and all those sorts of things.
Well, sir, one of the difficulties with that, for example, let's deal with the possible remedy as as the district court noted in its opinion, of remand for the purposes of taking further evidence or for further hearing regarding a particular issue. The same tribunal, the same decision maker that fired Ron, that affirmed its termination on a second impression, as it were, this is the tribunal that would hear any matters remanded for further consideration. The palpable, the patent bias that we feel actuated that body to not only fire Ron without proper compliance with procedural due process, but then to, as it were, affirm its termination in similar disregard of due process, that self-same body would preside over any subsequent proceedings. This is basically the result of a number of circumstances which really have victimized Mr. Michalowicz in Bedford Park, which I've mentioned in my complaint, including the fact that Bedford Park is a small community such that another statute pertaining to a tenured fireman like Ron would not apply in Bedford Park, precluding him from access to de novo post-termination procedures that would be available in Illinois in other communities for similarly tenured firefighters. And as the justices, I'm sure, are aware, the cases of Schacht and Duncan both signally mentioned the presence of de novo post-termination remedies under the state law of Ohio and of Wisconsin for the litigants in those cases as a material factor in the court's decisions in those cases, that the 1983 action was improper because we feel the claimant neglected his right to pursue a remedy, which is precisely the remedy that Ron Michalowicz wanted to obtain, tried desperately to obtain, and was denied.
Well, the post-termination hearing here that was conducted before the Village Board of Trustees was a plenary proceeding, wasn't it? It was a de novo proceeding. It wasn't in the nature of an appeal where the record was limited, et cetera. I mean, it was a full evidentiary hearing, as I understand the record.
I think the,
even though the state statute did not apply to this village because it was so small.
Well, note that in regard to the Ohio provisions in Duncan and the Wisconsin provisions that played a role in the Shack case, as this court pointed out, it's a full-blown evidentiary hearing before a new decision-maker. In all of these cases, in case after case, where the phrase, where the term, where the qualifying term de novo proceeding is applied to a post-termination evidentiary proceeding, it is invariably involving a decision-maker that has not been involved with the proceedings theretofore, a decision-maker that was not involved with the decision to terminate the claimant. This is why it is, I believe it's called a true de novo proceeding. The decision maker is not, is as it were, absolved of the presence of bias that would exist had that decision maker previously fired the individual.
So your argument on this point doesn't go to the nature of the proceeding post-termination, the administrative proceeding post-termination, but the body that was making the decision.
Yes, ma'am.
So your answer to my prior question is, yes, it was a plenary hearing. Yes. It was a full-blown evidentiary hearing with appropriate notice and opportunity to present evidence and argument and so forth. Your complaint here goes to the fact that it's the same village board that did the pre-termination review.
Ma'am, there may have been improprieties during that post-termination hearing, but our complaint in this action is cleaving to the issue that the Board of Trustees, during that post-termination hearing, having already terminated the appellant, having already terminated him in a manner that we believe was strongly suggestive of bias, was incapable of making proper credibility findings in the course of that post-termination proceeding. So I guess the two prongs of our complaint, I guess, are intertwined. You were saying?
Well, you anticipated my question. As I understand the law here, the proceedings are governed not by state statute as in larger municipalities, but by municipal ordinance. And what should have occurred here is that the original decision should have been made by an employment relations committee, as I understand the ordinance, and then the subsequent post-termination review or hearing would have been conducted by the full board. Is that the way it should have gone?
Well, that we feel that is the case. The municipal ordinance was ambiguous on its face. However, during the interim period after the pre-termination hearing, as it were, after Mr. Mikulovich was terminated, his attorney, Michael Ettinger, asked the attorney for the village of Bedford Park for clarification as to what provision would govern a post-termination hearing and what decision maker would preside over that particular proceeding. And the attorney for the village helpfully sent Mr. Ettinger a copy of the municipal ordinance in question, which stated that the Employee Relations Committee, which would be tantamount to a de novo decision-maker, a decision-maker presiding over a de novo hearing in the meaning of the, in this case, of the Ohio and Wisconsin statutes, that is, a decision-maker of no previous connection to the case, that would be the tribunal that would hear the post-termination proceeding.
What village officials comprised the committee, the Employee Relations Committee?
The constituents of the Employee Relations Committee are set forth in the ordinance. I have it right next to me. I could easily double-check
maybe
that for
you. Maybe rebuttal. You want to look that up?
Not a problem. Mr. Ettinger, I believe, asked for subsequent clarification, and there was a manifest impression. I don't think there's any other impression that the Employee Relations Committee was going to preside over the post-termination proceeding. When Ron Mikulovich and Mr. Ettinger appeared for the post-termination proceeding, it was not the Employee Relations Committee that had assembled to consider the case. It was the Board of Trustees yet again.
Well, my line of questioning in this regard goes to the adequacy of the judicial review under the Illinois Administrative Review Act. And it would be possible, would it not, for the Cook County Circuit Court to, if it accepted your argument that there were procedural irregularities here and a potential for bias because the village board essentially reviewed its own work, the court could remand, the Cook County Circuit Court could vacate and remand the decision, essentially, and send it back for the village to follow its own procedures, which would cure any procedural due process error, would it not?
I would respectfully differ. We feel that the Board of Trustees is too patently biased against Ron Michalowicz to fulfill that particular function, which is a function that would befit an impartial decision maker.
But the charges here were brought by the fire chief, not by any member of the board.
Well, the charges were.
Maybe you can correct me, but I didn't see that there were any board members that were, or trustees that were personally involved in investigating or bringing the charge.
We're not alleging that there were. We do allege in the briefs in this matter that the improprieties in this case were intensified, as it were, by the fact that the mayor, the president of the community, was also the president of the Board of Trustees. Right. Now, I know that there are cases.
It was a new mayor, apparently, wasn't it?
And it should be remembered that the previous mayor, Mr. Robeson, had explicitly okayed. He'd approved that very form letter, that very fundraising campaign for a man mortally sick with cancer, that apparently the subsequent administration proceeded to call into question with dispatch. And notwithstanding the fact that some of these explicit facts are not in the record, there are powerful inferences here where a former mayor approves of a fundraising letter and apparently his successor, mayor, disapproves of the entire affair, proceeds to, instigate or authorize a proceeding against Mr. Michalowicz and then preside over the Board of Trustees that would act as decision maker in that proceeding. This is a small community, and it is surely to be inferred in a community of about 500 or 600 or 800 people, whatever the actual accurate population was in that general ballpark, that the mayor, Mayor Brady, would certainly have reviewed and okayed at the very least any pending pending termination action against Mr. Michalowicz. But the heart and soul of our argument, and ma'am, this would also, I think, address what you had previously broached and brought to my attention, is that the circuit court cannot, we feel, resolve this case appropriately. The remedies that the district court mentioned in its opinions, in both of its opinions, would not, in this case, be susceptible, be capable, within a reasonable degree of probability, of giving Mr. Michalowicz an impartial hearing on any occasion. The same patent bias would remain. I must say, I have not found a case myself, and I've done some research on this. Perhaps there is one. I'm not saying there isn't. I have not found a case in Illinois or elsewhere where the same decision maker, after firing a tenured public employee like Mr. Michalowicz, proceeded to preside over the same case, preside over its previous termination of this individual. Now, with all these, with all other factors perhaps taken out of consideration for the nonce, what measure of impartiality is likely when the same decision maker, having terminated an individual, is going to, as it were, review its own termination? Is that decision maker likely to reverse itself? My time seems to be at a conclusion. I see a light going off. Thank you very much, and I'll have a rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zachary. We'll hear now from Ms. May.
May it please the Court. The complaint in this case was appropriately dismissed by the trial judge because there is an adequate remedy in administrative review before the Illinois court. In count one of plaintiff's complaint, he alleges that he was deprived of due process in the pre-termination proceedings. What he states in his complaint is that there was a statute on the books in Illinois, namely the Fireman's Disciplinary Act, which would have afforded him due process, but he claims that the village officials didn't follow that statute. The case law teaches that in such a circumstance, if there's an adequate state remedy, no federal due process claim is made with respect to such allegations. If you're alleging, in other words, that the village employees engaged in random and unauthorized acts by failing to follow this statute, if you have a state remedy, here it is administrative review, you don't have a federal due process cause of action.
Does the Illinois Fireman's Disciplinary Act apply to the village, your client?
Well, you know, we haven't, I'm not conceding that it does. It's alleged in the complaint that it does.
It's a legal question.
Right, and I think I would probably take issue with the definition of Mr. Mikhovets being a firefighter. But we're at the stage where we have not answered that allegation. But it is pled that it applied, and when it is alleged to have applied and alleged to have provided him with sufficient due process, if there's a state remedy available, which there is here, there's no federal due process cause of action for failing to follow the dictates of that statute.
Does the act cover the village, and does the village have boards and procedures in place to handle disciplinary complaints pursuant to the act? It was my understanding that the village is too small.
The statute council's referring to is a statute regarding police and fire boards, which would not apply in this case.
Okay.
The Fireman's Disciplinary Act is a separate statute that would deal with interviews with employees before they're terminated. So that would be a separate statute.
Okay. And if he is a firefighter, which he alleges, then it applies.
I believe so.
We have to accept that it does at this point.
I believe so, for purposes of the complaint.
You say in your briefs that he's a building inspector, not
correct.
A firefighter. I mean, that seems to be a pretty simple issue. That why is there a factual dispute over whether he is a firefighter? I've been a firefighter for 11 years or something, and then a fire inspector, whatever the difference is, for another bunch of years. But I just understand why we're still seeing a dispute like that in a case like this that's gone this far.
And really, at this point in the pleadings, I haven't disputed that the Fireman's Disciplinary Act, I guess my argument is that if it does apply, and plaintiff argues that it does, when you have a state remedy available to you, you don't have a federal due process claim. So for purposes of the pleadings as they are set forth in the complaint, they haven't set forth a due process violation because there is a state remedy which is adequate in this case.
Well, but then if you go to the state court and you say he's not covered by this act, so he's not entitled to any of these things. It seems to me it helps your case if he's a firefighter here, but then if you're going to turn around and argue that he's not.
And I think if you look at the procedures that he was actually provided with as they are pled in the complaint, I'm not so sure, as counsel argues, that the act wasn't followed, because you look at what is pled. He was given a letter by the fire chief in July of 2005 asserting that he was suspected of misconduct. He was interviewed twice.
Does the fire chief ordinarily have control over building inspectors?
Yes, they are in the purview of the fire department.
Okay.
Subsequent to the letter indicating that he was suspected of misconduct, he was interviewed twice with counsel present to address the allegations. Subsequent thereto, in August of 2005, he received a detailed list of charges, again from the fire chief, outlining specifically what he was alleged to have done, the specific village ordinances and state statutes that he was alleged to have violated. And then subsequent to that letter, he appeared again with counsel at a pre-termination hearing where his attorney was allowed to address the charges.
And that was before the village board, the full village board?
Yes, it was. And that was all subsequent to, preceding termination. So all of those steps were followed by the board before they terminated him. And it is our position that, you know, even if you look at what is pled here, it meets the Loudermill standard, because all Loudermill requires is an opportunity, a meaningful opportunity to address the charges that are asserted against you. And in this case, when you look at what is pled, this several-step process before the termination took place, that is more than adequate opportunity to address the charges. Loudermill is simply stands for the proposition that you have to have an initial check against mistaken decisions so long as there's a future opportunity to have a full hearing. And in this case, there certainly was a full hearing after the termination.
That was also before the village board.
It was.
Is that the statutory procedure, or if the statute doesn't control, the procedure called for by the village ordinance?
Well, I think it's questionable in this case as to whether whether the statute even provide or the village statute even provided Mr. Michalowicz with a post-termination hearing opportunity because he was a union employee, but the village went ahead and gave him that hearing anyway. So arguments could be made that as a union employee, he should have gone through the union contract, which was not what was done here. Instead, the village did provide him with an opportunity for a full evidentiary hearing subsequent to the termination.
Before the same decision maker.
It was.
And is that statutory procedure or procedure according to the ordinance?
The procedure in the ordinance with respect to non-union employees states that an employee relations committee will hear the evidence as an advisory body and then will make a recommendation to the full village board and the mayor, which subsequently make the ultimate decision.
And that didn't happen here?
There was no employee relations committee impaneled in this case.
Is the circuit court empowered to fix that?
I believe it is. You know, if you look at the Administrative Review Act and the powers it grants to the state court, the most expansive power would be to simply reverse the decision, and it could reinstate Mr. Michalowicz with back pay. And that would cure any alleged due process claim he would have in this forum. It could also remand, and I believe it could remand to an employee relations committee. It could order that further evidence be taken. I mean, there are multiple avenues that the state court could employ to address any claim that is made in this forum.
Is the employee relations committee just a subcommittee of the village board, or are there other village officials who sit on that body?
You know, it is my understanding that that's not a standing committee, that it would be an appointed body depending on, you know, circumstances arising. I don't think the situation comes up very often. It's a small community of about 350 residents. So
that would provide an independent review of the charges, even though the village board is the ultimate decision maker? Is that a correct understanding of how the village is set up to handle
right.
these things?
Right. I believe the committee would be individuals other than the board, if that is your question.
Okay.
I wanted to address a couple of statements counsel made with respect to the Shacton-Duncan cases, as far as those cases holding that de novo review was required in order for due process to be met. I think those cases don't use the word de novo review. What they say is if there is allegations of bias in the administrative proceedings, if you have the ability for review before an unbiased tribunal, such allegations of bias can be corrected before the new tribunal. And in this case, clearly we have the Illinois Circuit Court hearing the case concurrently with this appeal, and certainly that judge would be unbiased and has the ability to correct any deficiencies that he might perceive. One other point I wanted to address was counsel's statement that there must have been some ex parte communications going on here because when he spoke at the pre-termination hearing, he was the only person who got up and spoke before the board. First of all, I think ex parte in the context of pre-termination is not the correct word to use. Pre-termination proceedings need not be like a trial, so the word ex parte wouldn't necessarily fit in that context. And I think given what is pled in the complaint here with respect to the information that was provided to plaintiff before he was terminated in the form of two letters from the fire chief with detailed list of charges, two interviews with village officials, and then a hearing in front of the village board both pre- and post-termination, I think all of that would be sufficient to put him on notice as to what the charges were and what the evidence was against him. Sufficient for due process purposes.
The district court here also said that there was certiorari review in the circuit court in this situation, and that was an adequate state remedy. That was incorrect.
I think what he said was that the parties didn't provide him with the statute that would have authorized administrative review, but we don't contest that administrative review is the appropriate remedy here.
Right. There is no certiorari. The Administrative Review Act specifically eliminates common law remedies?
I believe so. Okay. I believe that it would be the exclusive remedy in this case in state court. And for the reasons I've stated, if there are no further questions, I would just ask that the order of the trial court dismissing the case with prejudice be affirmed because there are adequate administrative remedies here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. May. Mr. Zachary has how much time? You have 1 minute, sir.
Briefly, the Loudermill case based its holding on the de novo post terminations remedies available under Ohio law. And remember, Justices, that if there was ex parte communications, there is no discovery permitted in an administrative review context. This is something that the cases that counsel cited, such as the Comito case, stood for that proposition. No depositions proceeded. The cases that I cited in my brief, the cases of Sullivan versus the Department of Navy and other cases, depositions were taken which revealed these kinds of ex parte communications, which were considered to be of material import in vacating the underlying decision. And we do not believe the Circuit Court can reinstate Mr. Mikolovich's standard. This wasn't even mentioned by Judge Holderman. The remedy would be in the nature of a remand to the same decision maker, the Board of Trustees, that has previously terminated Mr. Mikolovich in a manner strongly suggestive of bias and indeed outright deprivations of procedural due process, and that thereafter reaffirmed its same decision without having the ability to make proper credibility findings during that second hearing, which was his only opportunity to present evidence in this case, which is a similarity between his case and the case of Swank versus Smart. Swank had one opportunity to present evidence. Ron did as well. I would request that the orders, the order dismissing the complaint and the order denying Ron Mikolovich's motion for reconsideration be reversed, panel, and that this matter be remanded to the district court for further proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Zachary. Thank you, Mrs. May. The case will be taken under advisement.